Okay, our topic today is safety, in particular fan safety. Safety for all sports participants, fans, athletes, coaches, officials, etc., is part of our mission statement at League of Fans. One of our goals is to encourage safety and civic responsibility in sports industry and culture. And so, to that end, our topic today is foul ball safety at baseball parks around the country. We have two guests. The first is Greg Wilkowski. Greg is a successful litigator with experience from pre-suit investigation through trial. After practicing for years at Winston and Strawn LLP, a leading international law firm on some of the country's largest cases, Greg opened his own law practice in Chicago, Illinois, to serve investors, consumers, and small businesses. He graduated from the University of Michigan Law School, where he was awarded the Craig Spangenberg Award for Exceptional Ability in Oral Advocacy. He is the lead on a lawsuit currently involving a foul ball injury at a minor league ballpark. Our second guest is Jordan Skop, a realtor, philanthropist, and lifetime baseball fan from Brooklyn, New York. Jordan is the founder of foulballsafetynow.com, which is dedicated to increasing fan awareness of the dangers of foul ball injuries. Conservative estimates are that 5,000 fans have been injured, some seriously, by foul balls in major and minor league ballparks since 2012. Jordan's efforts have received national news coverage as well as international press in Korea and Japan. He is the author of a forthcoming book about foul ball fan safety. Excuse me. And he has interviewed and advocated for victims and families affected by foul ball injuries. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ken. Glad to be here.
Thanks, Ken. Great to be here.
Hey, Jordan, why don't you start us off by giving us a brief overview of the historical problem with foul balls and, in some cases, even bats, which enter the stands at baseball games and injure fans?
It probably started when I was a fan sitting at the time where there were no nets above the dugouts in 2006. It was a Mets and a Cardinals playoff game, and I was four rows from the dugout, a couple of seats over from Jerry Seinfeld, of all people. And I was like, wow, this is pretty, we're in the hot zone here. And just from there, the little girl that got seriously injured in 2019 was sort of where this campaign sort of took hold. Little girl was hurt. A Chicago Cubs player hit a ball into a seat, and unfortunately it was a little girl just past end of dugouts that was seriously injured in Houston. And that was at the time where I sort of sprung into action. Kind of knew this thing happened, never really, gave it a whole lot of thought until then. And soon after that, I then learned about a little girl that was hurt 2 years earlier in New York, where I'm from, but I didn't even know about it. That was at Yankee Stadium. Similar situation. Little girl just past end of dugout, hit with a very hard line drive, and from there it's just been a continuation of going down the rabbit hole and seeing what we come up with. And we've been coming up with a whole lot, from the major leagues to the minor leagues, now even learning about some of these partner leagues. So it's been quite a journey, but
Well,
appreciate you asking.
some of these fans have actually been killed, right, through the years.
It so happens since 1970, from the deaths, unfortunate deaths that occurred, many more serious injuries, obviously. But the three deaths that I know about are two actually at Dodger Stadium, one in 1970 and one in 2018. That was a 14-year-old boy who had gone to a game with his friends in 1970, Alan Fish. And unfortunately, he got hit. He was behind the dugout, Dodger Stadium, and he died a few days after he was hit. And then Linda Goldblum in 2018, sitting up in a loge level, where unfortunately she was struck by a foul ball, and she died a few days after as well. That was sad. And then there was a woman in independent ball, Wendy Whitehead, actually a physician's wife, and I tried to reach out with him. And connect with him, but he hadn't gotten back to me when I did. I had connected with Irwin Goldblum a number of times. He's the widower of Linda, and I have not really found Alan Fish's family to talk with. So, but we have been reaching out to victims, and many people have a lot to say from their injuries, from little girls and who are now teenagers and have neurological issues. And it's just this powerful conversation that I don't think we've all been having. So it's worthy of all of our time and trying to get MLB to step it up sooner rather than later.
Yeah, those are terrible stories. Just a second, Greg. I was just going to say that there has been some big movement, at least at the major league level, with nets in a lot of cases down to the foul poles, but the minor leagues have kind of lagged behind, right? Go ahead, Greg.
That's correct. They have lagged behind. No, the first major lagging behind was Major League Baseball and just getting the nets up down to the foul poles. And it took quite a lot in order for and it took political involvement of senators, and it took pressure by the federal government to get Major League Baseball as an organization to put those nets up down to the foul poles and protect fans. And an easy, common sense solution that would prevent a lot of really devastating injuries. Minor league baseball has lagged even further behind that. Despite that, there are many more minor league ballparks around the United States and in Canada. Despite that, there are across all of those ballparks, more minor league baseball games, if you combine all of them, and many more fans who attend minor league baseball as well. So, you know, the difference between the majors and minors, you know, it's the major leagues, but they're all very professional athletes. They're all elite athletes. They're all hitting the ball hard. They're all throwing the ball hard. And that's Major League Baseball down to single A, down to the Gulf Coast League. They're elite athletes here.
And, well, those foul balls are coming 100 plus miles an hour over the dugouts and areas around that area.
Well, that's right. That's right. And, you know, foul ball injuries, balls being hit into the stands and hitting fans, bats being broken and hit into the stands and hitting fans. Now, those have existed for a long time, right? The variable that's changed, and you heard Jordan, you know, talk about these incidences from 2019, from 2017, from 2014. That's because the variable that's changed is that the conditioning of players has changed. The strength of players has changed. By way of example, I think the first accurately recorded 100 mile per hour pitch wasn't that Nolan Ryan sometime in the 1980s, maybe the late 80s. Yeah. Does it even make the news anymore? I mean, Verlander throws over 100. Routinely, or did anyway. I know he's getting up there in age too, but
well, almost all the relievers these days come in throwing 98 to 100.
Exactly, and that's one part of the equation. The other part is that the guys are hitting the ball faster than that ever before, and when you combine these two things, what you have is balls being hit into the stands at a faster rate than ever before, and the it happens so quickly that it's a matter of milliseconds for somebody to react. And of course you can't react in that amount of time. The best catcher in the world can't react in that amount of time. So,
I think
more of these incidences.
Another factor, you mentioned one big one there, but another factor in my mind is cell phones. And, you know, mm-hmm. in the 60s, 70s and 80s, fans weren't constantly looking at their cell phones and being distracted. And the more distracted fans you have, the higher the risk of injury from a foul ball, I would think.
There are fan apps where you are encouraged to follow along during the game as you're seated at the game. So they're absolutely a distraction. The text messages, the mobile internet everywhere you go, is absolutely a distraction. And not only that, but, you know, there's jumbotrons in stadiums as well. There's with high def video playing the rundown at first base, playing the throw out at home. immediately after the play, which distracts people as well. There's all sorts of games and so forth. Anybody who's been to a game in the past 10 years knows this pretty well.
Well, Greg, you're currently representing a client who was injured by a foul ball at a professional minor league baseball game. Who is your client and what's your lawsuit about? And what are you hoping to get from that?
Sure. So my firm is representing a woman named Sandy Klatt. And Miss Klatt is a resident of Peoria, Illinois. She's a baseball fan. She was an avid fan of the team there, which is the Peoria Chiefs. And they play out of Dozer Park in Peoria. Now, 12 years ago, she was hit by a foul ball, smacked in the eye really hard. We included a picture of it in our complaint, total black and blue everywhere. And in the interim time, she has not returned to the stadium for one reason, and that's because they, in the passing 12 years, they still have done nothing to put up netting to protect fans from that sort of injury. Now, she's not the only person. She's brave enough to bring the lawsuit in her own name, but there are other people there who have been routinely hurt by foul balls and bats that fly into the stands. And that's not just, you know, something we have to allege in our lawsuit and that we do allege. It's from public statements of the Chiefs organization. You know, they've publicly said several times, you know, we have maybe 10 people who are hit by foul balls a year, two or three badly enough to require medical attention. And they said this in the context of, well, it's not that big of a deal. See, it's only two or three that require medical attention a year. In our responses, that's totally unacceptable to ask fans to come to games, to ask fans to bring their families, to have them seated in the unprotected areas along the first and third base lines with everything going on with the Jumbotron, with the cell phones, and not make them aware of this and not put up netting to protect them. Netting that we know will protect people because it's worked pretty well in the past 5 to 10 years where it's been up in the major leagues.
Well, Jordan, this issue of foul balls going in the stands obviously has been around since we started playing baseball, but there was something at some point the powers to be in baseball created the quote unquote baseball rule. Could you elaborate on that a little?
Sure. So for more than 100 years, you know, baseball knew that, you know, in another way of putting it, let the maiming commence, because by hurting people or even killing you, it would leave the baseball fan a little recourse of what they can potentially do. Most people who do get hurt by foul balls, that NBC study, which implied more than 5,000 people were injured, not necessarily maimed, but most of those 5,000 people will not file because they're on initial consultation with their attorney. They'll say, you know, the attorney will probably say they're not going to work on contingency because there's most chances are they're not going to get too far because of the baseball rule. So it basically gives them almost blanket immunity. There's been some cases. I know I've been talking with Greg in Illinois where there's been some, maybe some chinks in the armor. There's a judge in Illinois that is in the middle of a proceeding that used a term called willful and wanton, which implies that the White Sox may have had prior knowledge that their nets were not high enough, far enough, and wide enough. The case was the Eddie Rybarski case. It's almost like blanket immunity for the MLB owners. They kind of knew that it was going to be nature of the beast, that people were going to get seriously injured from time to time. And unfortunately, to this day, even this past summer, Ken, two children in critical condition, coincidentally, one of them in Peoria, Illinois, where if the nets were all the way down to the foul pole, it may have saved the little girl who was actually in critical condition. It was reported in the Peoria Journal Star over the summer. And then there was another little 3-week-old baby in Hickory, North Carolina. It's probably not a good idea to bring a 3-week-old baby to a game. I get it. But, you know, balls find their way to people. And we need to have a long discussion about this, about how high, how far, how wide, whether children should be 18 or under, similar to countries like Japan, where they actually do have a culture of communication when it comes to netting in many ways, which it dignifies the fan. In America, I don't feel like we're really doing that, because like I said, in 2023, two children in critical condition, both of them are on the improvement, which is great. And there was even a gentleman blinded in Pittsburgh this year at PNC Ballpark. So, yeah, I think it's really regulation and independent netting council of some sort needs to come in and tell all the minor league and major league and now these partner leagues how high, how far, how wide the nets need to be. Until that happens, people are going to continue to get hurt. So that more or less what the baseball rule was from 100 years ago to the present. Many of these people will not have recourse, and these injuries should not continue. So I put it out there.
Yeah. Greg, can you elaborate on that and how much strength you think this baseball rule is? I know for years when they used to be paper or cardboard tickets, there was a small print about fans assuming the risk of foul balls and other injuries at the ballpark. Now that we have mostly digital tickets, I don't even know where that might be, but does that still carry any weight in your mind?
So the small fine print on the back of tickets and stuck within the terms and conditions of any online purchase you make of a ticket, it varies. It does have some legal weight still. However, it's not as uniform as it once was, where you're going to be held to a standard of, as a fan, of complete knowledge of everything bad that might happen to you at a baseball game due to, and as evidence of that, turn over your ticket and look at the 2-point font, and you will see that the organization claims no liability for what happens to you. So that's chipped away gradually. It doesn't afford the protection that it once did. Now the baseball rule is still good law in the United States, and it varies a little bit from state to state among the 50 states. And in some states, it's common law, so it's judge-made law. And in other states, like my own in Illinois, there's actually a statute that the legislature passed that says, they all say something along the lines of, if you are the owner or operator of a stadium and you have basic netting up, a fan who is injured at your game will not have a recourse in your ball club for their injury. So you will not be held liable for that as the owner operator of the stadium. Now, whether or not that ever made sense is a question, but specifically and particularly nowadays, where the ball clubs are the ones that are going to have the information about fan injuries. The ball clubs, the owners, are the ones who have all of this information about where the hot spots are at a stadium, where you're likely to be hit with a baseball, how many people were hit with a baseball flying into the stands, what kind of injuries they had. A working family who just buys a ticket for their kids to go to the baseball game, and hey, you want good seats, right? Those are right behind first base line. Get real close. They don't have that information, and they shouldn't be charged with knowledge of that. And the person or entity that should be charged with the knowledge of what can happen and what routinely does happen is the ball club. So it's the argument for chipping away at the baseball rule and saying, wait a second, I'm not so sure these owners and operators should have complete immunity for any baseball accident that may happen to a spectator is actually fair in the year 2023.
Well, it's obviously a legal issue, but I think it's also a public relations issue. I mean, you would think these fans or the organizations would want to protect their fans, and eventually Major League Baseball figured that out when there was some bad publicity around some of these incidents. And I believe most, if not all, of the major league teams now have netting down to the foul poles, but some of the minor league teams have lagged in that regard. And I'm not, it's confusing in this Peoria Chiefs case in which you're litigating, Greg, why they've been unwilling to put the netting up, because they're probably spending more on legal fees now than it would cost to put that netting up. They don't even bother to put it to the end of the dugouts as a first step, do they?
So that's correct. Now you can do a survey of all Major League Baseball stadiums and almost all minor league baseball stadiums that have netting at a minimum, so behind home plate, and then down to the end of the dugouts. And the reason there is because they're hot spots, and Major League Baseball and minor league baseball is well aware of how many people are injured there per year, and how little reaction time anybody sitting there is going to have when a ball's hit into those areas. The Peoria Chiefs don't have that netting. Forget about down to the foul poles, and they should have it down to the foul poles. They don't have netting even above the dugouts. And they've been asked about this over the years, and they've said publicly, it's coming, it's coming. We know that we should put that up. It's coming, it's coming. After year four, I think we're on, of those promises having gone unfulfilled, we decided to file the lawsuit because it's time to put the nets up. And whether or not you're going to do it voluntarily, whether or not you're going to do it because minor league baseball requests that you do it, or whether or not you're going to do it because a lawsuit forces you to do it, or public relations get bad enough that you should do it, are all good reasons why you should do it. So put the netting up at a minimum down to the end of the dugouts, but certainly at some point down to the foul poles as well. It's a very simple solution. That's what this lawsuit is about. That's why Sandy Klatt brought it. It's about the corresponding duty that that the ownership of the Chiefs organization owes to its fans,
right?
Who it invites to games every year, invites to games and has them sit in fans sit in unprotected areas.
I would think that obviously there's the cost issue now, which is minimal for major league teams and probably triple A teams, but as you get down to the lower levels of minor league baseball, they might argue, well, that's too expensive for our budget or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What exactly do you think the cost is to at least put netting up to the end of the dugouts, let alone to the foul poles?
So generally speaking, for a minor league baseball club to put netting down to the end of the foul poles, or at least down to the end of the dugouts, if at any time it was the hundreds of thousands of dollars that some ball clubs will say it cost to put up that netting, if that was ever true, it is certainly the case now, based on a review of netting companies, based on people who are very knowledgeable about how much these netting costs will actually cost, and what they say, what they've publicly said, for a few $10,000, this can be done. This is not something that is a million-dollar capital improvement project. Now, certainly, so I understand that minor league ball clubs especially often will say, well, you know, we can't, they cry poverty sometimes. We can't afford that. They do manage to afford significant capital improvements over the years. In the case of the Peoria Chiefs, they have one of the largest jumbotrons in minor league baseball. That's what they say. they as an inducement for you to come to the game. It's over 1,000 square feet. It's super cool. There's other capital improvements they're required to make for minor league baseball and other ones that they choose to make. But this should be prioritized among the capital improvements that they do make, is netting down to the, at least down to the end of the dugouts.
Well, the Peoria Chiefs are a farm club of the St. Louis Cardinals, and they play right in Peoria, Illinois. Are they getting any pressure in this regard from the city or their parent club at all?
Not
Maybe I'll
I'm
jump
aware
in
of.
On that, Greg. Well,
what's that?
Yeah, I'll jump in on that. I actually I had a conversation with the general counsel last week, Mike Whittle of the St. Louis Cardinals, and he told me, I said, do you know if there's plans for the Peoria Chiefs to put up netting for next season? He says he heard there were plans. He says, but you should ask them. So I said, well, maybe you're in a better position to find out. Don't you guys pay the salaries of the Peoria Chiefs? Shouldn't the fans in Peoria feel like they're safe? And he kind of, you know, chuckled. And from there, the conversation sort of went downward. But I did think it's in their interest, the Cardinals, to compel their affiliates to keep fans safe. Yes. And just to add on, the two children, the high profile kids from 2017 and 2019, they were just past end of dugouts. So even just netting that goes to the end of the dugout, I can't accept that. I really feel like, you know, I'm aware of a pregnant woman who I interviewed. She was just past end of dugout in Arizona at a spring training game in 2021. These two children just past end of dugout. Line drives are finding you. Clearly, there's a video of a ball that goes in between two guys when there was no netting above the dugout in Tampa. So this can more or less occur in Peoria today. And they're like, I think, as Greg said, maybe like the 1% of the 120 that don't even have netting above the dugout, let alone all the way down the lines. But I do really feel like regulation and government agencies are needed to follow this matter, which they have not.
Well, even the players' association, though, because I've seen a lot of quotes that players want this netting because, you know, some of these batters that have hit balls that have hit fans are kind of traumatized themselves.
Sure.
When they see the damage. So I would think like the Major League Baseball Players Association, and now there's going to be a Minor League Baseball Association.
I would love to get my hands on those minutes. I would have hoped that the Baseball Players Union would have said it's non-negotiable. We're not going to hit balls into sections where kindergartners are sitting. But that's for us to discover what was ever discussed in collective bargaining over the years. So any investigative reporters out there, please, let's see what they've actually exchanged with each other. So, you know, we're all culpable. We're all, even fans, we're all part of it, and we all can step up. So that's my attitude on that.
Greg, have you interviewed or involved players at all in your lawsuit and where they stand on this?
So I have, you know, it's funny in doing the research for this lawsuit, which is, we wanted to present something that was very thoroughly researched and documents well the risk here and the reasons that they should be required to put up the netting. And in doing that research, you know, we came across just this mass of public statements by players, both in the major leagues and in the minor leagues, who say things along the lines of just put up the netting, you know, in the major leagues and minor leagues. There's no reason to wait. Who say things such as when they have their own families who go to watch dad play, they require their families to sit behind the netting parts because they also see what happens. Now, Jordan's interviewed a lot of players. I haven't interviewed any specifically, but you know, we included a few quotes in that complaint. Truthfully, I could have included 50 of them. But we led with like three of them, but we could have included 50 because it's a common feeling, among many players. Yeah.
Well, where does this lawsuit stand? What's next? And,
So, the world of litigation, moves sometimes slowly. And what's next is, you know, we filed our complaint and now the city, the ball organization is going to respond to our complaint, and we're going to go through a little phase of whether or not we, Sandra Klatt, has made sufficient allegations from a legal standpoint in order to keep the lawsuit alive and to continue it along. And that's kind of the first major phase of a lawsuit. And the Chiefs organization has taken the position that the lawsuit should be dismissed and that it's legally insufficient. So that's really the next big phase of the lawsuit. And we're currently filing our opposing papers in court, and we'll have an argument in front of the judge. And at the end of the day, the judge will decide.
It's a class action suit now too, right?
It is. It is. We brought it as a class because Sandra Klatt's not the only one to have been injured there. She's not the only one with a stake in this. There are many other people with a stake in this as well, including on the very day that the complaint was filed, somebody else who was injured. I mean, what a coincidence. Due to a foul ball being hit into the stands at Dozier Park where the Chiefs play.
Wow.
So, and you know what, one more comment on this, and this isn't just a lawsuit where we say, you know, people are being injured, therefore you should do something to protect them, the fans at the game. We do say that, but the Chiefs have an arrangement with the city of Peoria. It's an arrangement that many ball clubs around the United States have. It's a development agreement whereby taxpayer dollars are given to the organization to build the stadium, to operate the stadium, to operate ball games there. Significant taxpayer dollars. We're talking about in excess of $10 million. And in return, we say, well, all of these taxpayers have a stake in this now, not just the fans of the game, but all the taxpayers as well. So we're actually bringing the lawsuit on behalf of the city of Peoria as well. It's a law in the state of Illinois allows us to do that. Now, the city itself is not joining the lawsuit, but we're bringing it on taxpayers' behalf because they spend significant amounts of dollars supporting the ball club, and the ball club should support them back.
Okay. Jordan, last question here. We're getting close to having to wrap up, but college baseball is becoming huge. I think they had an attendance record this year, and some of the big college baseball conferences, you know, they're drawing 10, 15,000 to some of their games, and the College World Series gets a lot more than that. What are you seeing in terms of college stadiums or baseball fields and in terms of netting? What is the NCAA and individual conferences and colleges doing in this regard?
Well, I hate to put Bradley baseball on the map, but I don't know much about what's happening on the college level with when it comes to the netting. And I've been told mixed reports that some places have more netting than others, but Bradley actually shares the same ballpark as the Peoria Chiefs in Dozier Park. So unfortunately, clearly the fans that attend those games who are cheering for Bradley or the opposing team's fans who come to visit Peoria, they're in harm's way. We know that based on the lawsuit that Greg's involved in. We know that you know, they may hit it 100 miles an hour on the Peoria level, on the Peoria Chiefs level, but they'll still hit it 97 miles per hour on the Bradley Braves level. And they actually do share the same ballpark as the Peoria Chiefs. And, you know, and I have not connected to the college as of yet or spoken to their administration. So if anyone's listening, you know, please somebody inform the Bradley Braves and their school that there's attention on this issue in Peoria for a reason. And unfortunately the fans of the Bradley Braves are as well, they're also compromised by attending games at Dozier Park. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah, it's issue obviously all the way down to high school levels, but that's for another topic. But it's been an interesting discussion. And Greg, I hope you keep us up to date on this lawsuit and how it proceeds, because I think it could impact a lot of other areas besides Peoria, Illinois.
Absolutely. Put up the damn nets.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I will.
Put the nets up. Put the nets up and then worry about the Jumbotron.
Exactly. Yeah, let's get our priorities right here.
Okay.
So, well, Greg, thank you, Ken. Appreciate it.
Greg Wilkowski and Jordan Scott, thank you for your time. And it's been another issue or another podcast of League of Fans Sports Forum podcast, and we'll talk to you all next time. Thank you.